On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. The first thing I should offer is a tremendous expression of thanks. The last 3 days have been the closest the horn has ever gotten to absolutely collapsing. And we may not... We ain't out of the woods yet by any stretch of the imagination. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, broadcasting rather uncertainly and uncomfortably from the home studios, to which I was so excited to return. Well, by now, those of you who have been following the program know that we came back to a financial crisis that was based on January's fundraising being so disastrously low. And in the past 24 hours, you, not I, but you, have solved that. You have saved this little experiment in independent, progressive broadcasting. I'm sorry I am late getting to the microphone tonight. It is 11 minutes past the hour during the live broadcast. And frankly, I don't know how long we're going to be on the air. It took all day, with your help, to bring back our internet and phones. See? Listen. That's a dial tone. It's a dial tone about which we are very happy. Phones are back, internet's back, and just about an hour ago, having been back here earlier, just about an hour ago, I walked back here to find 2 inches of water standing in the studio floor and swirling around the bases of the uninterruptible power supply. And the main production computer. We had what is called in these parts a pipe burst. Yeah, I agree, Mr. Gibson, in the chat room. Y'all come on into the chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Y'all, yeah, come on in. Mr. Gibson says, Bob Kincaid, I think you're hoarding more than your share of Murphy's Law events. You need to spread some of that around. Well, I agree. I've got more than my share, but y'all don't want this. That noise, make that noise again, Agnes. I don't want it. I don't know if the mic's picking that up or not, but as I speak, Agnes is behind me with a mop. Every towel we own in this house is on some portion of the studio floor. And understand, this is not poor, poor, pitiful Bob. This is life in the working class. This is us. In point of fact, I guess it was day before yesterday, I read a very, very cogent, well-written piece about radio. I'm always drawn to these stories. By our good friend Peter B. Collins. He wrote it over for Truth Out. It's called it's titled An Insider's View of the Progressive Talk Radio Devolution. And there's not a lot to disagree with in there. But I probably, it's not so bad with progressive sites, with, you know, generalized sites like Chicken Noodle News' site and so forth. Going down and reading the comments is either something you do simply for the hilarity of it, or because you don't know better. On the other hand, with a place like Truth Out, you can go and read the comments and pick some interesting things up. And I'm not engaging, I hope, in too much shameless self-promotion. When I refer to one comment that I saw, and I'm trying to find it down here, tried to save it. I should have saved it, is what I'm saying. But someone writing in response to Peter B. Collins' op-ed said in talking about the state of terrestrial radio, said, I wonder what it would be like if we were to ever have a radio program that was by working class folks about working class life. And I thought, man, you need to check out The Horn, because it does not get much more working class than Hillbilly Me and our buddy Rick Smith. Ugh. Because, you know, that's the working class is what happens when the pipes burst. Working class is what happens when, you know, the derecho blows your roof off, or chunks of it, and you struggle to get stuff fixed. That's working class. Granted, as Mr. Gibson noted, there are some elements of Murphy's Law at work. But still, I mean, you could have knocked me down with a feather, you know, or an anvil. Either way, when I opened the door into the studio, and I heard this Niagara-esque sound, and I hollered back to Agnes in the house, Houston, Houston. Houston, we have a problem. And Agnes came barreling out of the bedroom. What is it? What is it?
What now?
What now? Yeah, that's what it was. What now? Never say what now. So I got to tell you, and this is not me being a... I hope it doesn't mark me out as a coward. But I got to tell you, sitting in a studio where there is still water puddled on the floor, around 4, 5, 6 uninterruptible power supplies and one very large, heavy computer does not inspire bravado. So I want to make sure that I do one thing right off the bat. First names only. I want to thank everybody who helped us solve the financial crisis. It is not completely solved. But basically what happened is we caught up with January's fundraising. So thanks go out as follows. Oh, Mr. Gibson wants to, wait, what do you mean a new doc number for the ACAC? Yeah, it's HR 526, Mr. Gibson. That's its new bill number. Okay. So here we go. This is the list of people who, in the last 12 hours, really, have pulled the horns fat out of the fire. You know, when you're putting out a fire, you want a lot of water, but really, having it 2 inches deep on your studio floor is overkill, I think. Goddess of Irony? Would you let off? No, here are the names of those, first names only, who responded to the call and made it possible for even this very weird little filibobster to go out. Dr. John, Ben, Kath, Gila, Jeffrey, Betsy, Beth, Don, Fritz, Barb, Greg, David, Duncan, different David, Rick, Mark, Sal, Mike, Don, twice Don, thank you Don, Bob, Anthony, Linda, Michael, Jason, Randall, Douglas, Fritz, again, Dennis, Rick, again, Marty, Ben, again, Kyle, Barry, and Janie. That is quite a list, and it is quite inspiring. It's why I'm sitting here with water on the floor running around electrical devices. Because with the effort that you all put out, there was no way that I was not going to answer the bell. It just had to happen. So thank you intensely. We raised 1,400 of the $1,500 we needed, and I finagled and haggled and negotiated and advocated the folks into turning everything back on. And it'll stay on as long as we keep the bills paid. But the fact of the matter is, and I just, you know, I want to have a candid discussion about what we're doing here. It's when we talk about fundraising and what it takes to keep this on the air, there's no padding. This is rock bottom, de minimis. And so when we pull up $2,000 short on fundraising in 1 month, it makes the likelihood of the next month all the less. So that's where we are. We absolutely had to raise 1,500. We raised 1,400, and I argued over 100. It came in, and as quickly as it came in, it went out. And, you know, it's fitting that all of this is happening on Moran Monday. I hope I don't wind up being one of the Morans. Because as when I put out the tweet about all the water on the studio floor, Marty replied, I think it was Marty, and said, what would Rosanna Dana say? The beloved Gilda Radner.
It's like my old daddy used to say, if it's not one thing, it's another. If the internet service hadn't been turned off, the studio's got 2 inches of water on it.
That's kind of where we are. But it's nothing to sit in sackcloth and ashes over. This is... because if I talk about something like this, it's because I suspect there is a degree of relevance for us all, this community, this little family that we have built. I suspect that there is relevance because someone, many of us out there, have had frozen pipes burst. I suspect that we have all, at one time or another, faced bills we can't pay. In this case, it just happened to be the bills that make this possible. We took care of the past dues. We've still got currents. So, you know, the fat has been drawn out of the hottest part of the fire. We've gone from incinerating to simply sizzling, if we want to talk about ourselves in terms of bacon. And who doesn't love bacon? But my sincere thanks, our sincere thanks to all of you. That commenter somewhere inside that story, an insider's view of the progressive radio devolution. Well, it really struck me because the fact of the matter is what that person was saying they wanted to hear is what we've been doing for almost 10 years. The first comment on that story reads as follows. First problem. AM radio is perceived as the realm of old curmudgeons. You are trying to create new behavior patterns in a demographic by using a flawed product, namely national talk, that has little or no local relevance. Second problem, content. The same dog whistle approach that works on conservative brains doesn't get the same addictive response in progressive and liberal minds. Their consciousness resides in a different part of the brain. They are not simply conservatives with a different set of values. They are different thinkers. Frankly, I've found national progressive talkers wonkish and boring. Really? And a drudge to listen to. Never heard this program. I mean, I resent being called a drudge. Wonkish and boring, I can live with. I got the impression they were following some formula created by a non-human. It had that stale consultant smell about it. It contained zero populist passion. Wow. This person has never heard this program, Rick Smith's program, and God knows, not Malloy. Conversely, I've heard and got hooked on some local shows that piqued my curiosity and delivered on the promise to contextualize my world regardless of the scope or size. And this is interesting. We progressives are curious, intuitive, creative, and inquisitive. We want to know not just facts, but meanings and context. A sentence like that has a kind of a Dr. John quality to it. We want to know not just facts, but meanings and context. Our sense of humor is vastly different from the bully mind's fear-hate snickers. When progressive talk progresses into a deeper understanding of its complex audience, it will thrive regardless of format and despite corporate bias. Until then, you're on your own. You hear that, Horn family? We're on our own. We knew that, didn't we? We kind of proved that in the last 12 hours. But there are some truisms out there, and they're truisms that have been manifested here time after time. the whole reason, the whole reason the concept of conversation radio was developed was because hearing Megadiddos from Busted Knuckle Rush, I want to have your babies. Well, that's enough about you. Let's talk about me, my good friend. I was in the Dominican Republic studying conservatism with a 9-year-old boy last week. Where's the value? There isn't any. There isn't any. In the meantime, I'm proud of the fact that this is the future. Even if the future has a couple of inches of, or has had a couple of inches of water on it, or has had, thanks to Agnes. Agnes? Oh, God, she's left me. Now, here's that quote. Here's the quote from the Peter B. Collins piece. Where's Studs Terkel? Or before him, Woody Guthrie? I'd like to see somebody emerge out of the working class and tell it how it is working for minimum wage these days. Bet you find some folks who would listen, too. Yeah, you would. They're right here. They're at the horn. They listen 3 hours a night, either live 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific, or they listen when they wish via the podcast. And what a community you are. What a community you are. I really didn't intend to launch a giant filibobster on all of this, but golly Moses, what an adventurous couple of days we've had. And of course there were technical nightmares with the equipment while we were in D.C. That was what made it so pleasant to get back to the what had formerly been dry studios of the Horn here at the mansion in almost level West by God, Virginia. But I wanted to share a couple of things with you. Because you follow the news and things just kind of grab me in the course of trying to pull a broadcast together. Because even while we were furiously trying to and desperately trying to get the studio re-energized from an internet standpoint, it was also a matter of trying to corral the Morans and see what they were up to. Because this is, you know, Moran Monday. It would have been violative of some sort of, I don't know, my universe just would have felt wrong not to be here this evening. For the first time since, 1435, a pope has thrown in the towel, called it quits, said, out of here. You know, you can almost hear Benny the Rat saying, if I hear one more story about one more little boy getting stooped by one more priest, I swear I'm taking my House of Hoover hat and my ruby slippers and I'm splitting Splitsville out of here, gone. What? Oh, the story just came in? See ya. How can you not be on the air for that? It It would just be wrong. Because something like that comes along, I mean, it comes with its own... It comes with its own bumper music, for God's sakes. Well, in due time it does. So, hey, Horton Radio, this is going out to the Pope. So, Pope Benedict. Now the 85-year-old Pope Benny will climb over the Alps and escape the Nazis. Oh, wait. Yeah, you got to be on the air for that. Of course, everybody who downloads the podcast will get all of this. The people who have been hanging out in the chat room, people who tuned in and probably have tuned back out by now, didn't realize... And I apologize, Lib in South Carolina. I really have my written list of things I'm supposed to do, but I've been a little bit nervous about sitting here in a pool of water around a bunch of electrical devices, and I kind of forgot to throw the third switch. The third switch has been thrown. But you get a Benny the anti-aircraft gunner. Bowing out, you know, how do you not play the goodnight song from The Sound of Music? Or maybe if you really want to go for kitschy, there's always this.
Good night, until we meet again. Adios, au revoir, I'll be the same.
Tight and pleasant dreams to you. Here's a
You know, if I didn't have a lot more stuff on my mind, I'd come up with some parody lyrics to that for, you know, for Benny stepping down, bowing out. Yeah, you know, those first... And see, the thing is, with the first 30 minutes, that's where I thanked everybody by name for kicking in and getting us back on the air this evening. Until, you know, we found out that a pipe had burst and Agnes was standing back here in the water, hoping her rubber-soled shoes would protect it. Yeah. And we're still sopping and mopping. But since I hadn't pressed the third thrown the third switch, let me go back and suggest for folks who are listening live that you no last names were used. No, this is the story I was talking about in reference to what we already do here at the Horn. Peter B. Collins is excellent analysis, the devolution of progressive radio. Fascinating read. But that's not all we've got. There was an article that I read yesterday in Salon. Yes, Marty, we are referring to Cardinal Ratzinger. Okay, we can get rid of the... Get rid of Lawrence Welk there. There we are. This is another thing that I'm going to post in the chat room. Probably we'll tweet this at some point, too. One of the things that we have to do a better job of, all of us, is to make questions of sustainability and viability and future something that we can get our heads around. And several years ago, we had a good friend of mine, Steve Trash, the internationally acclaimed magician, rockin' eco-hero Steve Trash. Steve and I grew up together, went to the same high school, that kind of stuff. We had him on the program. He does a lot to teach. He does a great job teaching, especially kids, about why it matters to take care of the planet. But I just discovered by accident, or happenstance, something he had recently done called, and just jot this down for later. It's rather lengthy. It's about 11 minutes long, 11 and a half minutes long. If you go to YouTube and you look up The Illusion of Sustainability, a slideshow talk video by Steve Richardson, you will find this very simple and yet very compelling explanation of just exactly what sustainability is and the illusion that we think we live on an infinite planet of infinite resources. Steve is funny and genial and brilliant. And I got, I got to thinking about it after I read an article and shared it, I guess it was Saturday, that an article that I had read on at Salon. The author of the article at Salon is Alexander Zaychik. The title of the article is "To Get the Gold, They Will Have to Kill Every One of Us." It is the story of a tribe of indigenous people in Ecuador, the Shuar, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Shuar, S-H-U-A-R, Shuar, of Ecuador, and their struggle against having their homeland raped for gold. Have these unimaginably lush, magnificent living forest and mountain and river spaces liquidated and turned into a profit center for mostly Chinese and Canadian gold mining outfits to make their profits. The situation in Ecuador is particularly compelling because they have an allegedly leftist government that has an alleged commitment to sustainability. And as the title of the story notes, the position taken by the Shuar people of Ecuador is to get the gold, they will have to kill every one of us. And as I read this article, I realized once again that it's the same damn story. If there happens to be a group of people living halfway decently upon the land, be it in Ecuador or Peru, be it in Indonesia or Malaysia, be it in India or Bangladesh, or be it in Appalachia, southern Illinois, or Arizona, or Alberta, Canada, or upstate New York, wherever people are, if there are mineral resources under the ground, somewhere a corporate parasite is making a decision that their lives do not matter as much as the corporation's profits. And so, in liquidating the land, they also liquidate the people. The Salon article is a lengthy piece, as internet articles go. And somewhere in it, there's a statement about a biologist or somebody from the developed world who is going around for just reason with his hair on fire trying to tell people what's going on in the El Condor region of Ecuador. And in the body of the article, by Alexander Zaychik, he quotes this biologist And I'm looking for the quote right now. Because all of my, frankly, all of my setup for the program sort of screamed to a halt when we saw the little miniature river flowing through the studio. Tomorrow is going to be a real hoot. Fun with PVC plumbing. But there's a quote, and here's the description of the land itself. The Condor's ecological riches are a consequence of unusual wetness. The mountains of the Condor sit on massive aquifers containing a fair chunk of the entire South American continent's fresh water. This water trickles out of innumerable crevices and pours forth from countless cascades. The streams feed famous rains. The volume of rain produced in the Condor's water cycle is enormous, thanks to a unique commixture of altitudes, endemic soils, and solar and wind patterns. The heavy rainwater feeds dozens of small rivers that wind east into the Rios Zamora and Santiago, which sustain the region's agricultural economy. These eventually merge with Peru's Marañón River, a major tributary of the continental Amazonian watershed. The amount of water pulsing through the Condor makes laughable government and industry claims that large stores of toxic mining waste, where have we heard that before? Oh, wait a minute. Can be contained in tailing ponds. Ponds, it's just a pond. It's just a little, it's, you know, like Huck Finn would sit by with a cane pole, and pull out your sun perch. They're tailing seas. And they're toxic. Makes laughable government and industry claims that large stores of toxic mining waste can be contained in tailing ponds, and that samples of the region's wildlife can be preserved in greenhouse arcs for future replanting. The Condor cycle is supported by at least 24 kinds of fragile soils and vegetation cover. This web of microclimates will not survive the violence of major mining. It all begins with the rain and the rivers, and the mining will affect rainfall, drying up and contaminating important hinges in the larger Amazon River system. The fools don't understand that disturbing one part disturbs the whole. The fools. The Shuar people who live there became famous to the outside world as head shrinkers. These are the people who have a process of literally de-sculling heads and then miniaturizing them through a boiling process. The biologist that I was referring to is Alfredo Luna. And the sentence in the article says, a synopsis of his findings about the flora and fauna of the Condor is the subject of a slideshow Luna gives around the world in an attempt to catalyze the conservation community. And ever since having read about, back at the beginning of the 20th century, a conversation between John Muir and Theodore Roosevelt, in which Roosevelt expected to be praised for his conservation efforts, but instead was upbraided by Muir, who looked at him and said, Mr. President, when are you going to give up on this foolishness of conservation and start talking about preservation and letting people and lands simply be what they are? Ever since then, I've been very aware of the difference between conservation and preservation. because the notion of conservation can be deceptive and mesmerizing, wherein we think if we save some forest over here, we can take down some forest somewhere else. The other part of it being that when I read that the synopsis of the findings is the subject of a slideshow Luna gives around the world in an attempt to catalyze the conservation community. If it is the conservation community at whom an attempt to save this region is being aimed, the region is almost, by definition, ab initio, doomed to failure. It will be hard enough to begin with to get any kind of a victory over the massive money of the mining concerns. That's enough of a battle. Enough of a struggle. A struggle which these Shuar people are willing to engage their very lives to win, against mining companies that have no qualms against murder and genocide. The Spanish tried some genocide back in the early days of the conquest and figured out that they didn't want any part of the Shuar. Well, now the Chinese and the Canadians are back, and they're after the same thing the Spaniards were. Gold. Gold. But in the failure to create a movement that is human rights-based instead of conservation-based, it hogties the attempt to help the people save themselves. And any hope Well, you get the idea. That is why, and this is sort of a program reminder, that is why I'll be getting on a plane Thursday and going back to Wisconsin to try to add what little bit I may be able to add to the struggle there against this god-awful plan to blast the life out of the region in which arose some millions and millions of years, if not billions of years ago, the Pinoki Hills. As beautiful a piece of land as I've ever seen in my life. Amazing rivers, watersheds, life-giving lands. And I'll be going to visit the Lac-Couturé band of the Anishinaabe people, the Ojibwe. And I'll be talking on a panel on the 16th, and then flying back on most likely the 17th. Not going to say that I have any special expertise, but going because it is a part of something that I deeply believe in. And we all know how dangerous that word is when misapplied. Going because I simply feel compelled, because of what has been done to the land here,
where I live, where my family lives, where my friends, my neighbors, my colleagues live, where the waters have been poisoned, the mountains blasted apart, and vast toxic seas of coal industry filth and goo dot the land. I simply believe that peoples must stand shoulder to shoulder, must link arms. I really do believe in the one big unit theory that was espoused in the early part of the late 19th and early 20th century by people like Big Bill Hayward. One big union. Not a whole bunch of little ones. One big one where everybody understands that your struggle is my struggle. That your peril is my peril. That your success is my success, your joy, my joy. That when we remove the otherness from ourselves, when we sit and break bread and dance and laugh and sing and discuss in solemn attitude, that when we do all those things, then and only then do we have a chance, or dare I even hope it, a likelihood, of beating back the parasites. Not predators. We've discussed that before. Not predators, but parasites. Who would feed off of our very bones if they thought they could make a nickel out of it. The Lac Couturier reservation is not far from Hayward, Wisconsin. So that is where the panel will be. And I hope to do some outreach, some talking, some ally creation the whole time I'm there. Because I'm convinced I am absolutely convinced that if we could ever create a situation in which people from Appalachia could trade places with people in Bangladesh, or people from Ecuador could come to northern Wisconsin, where affected peoples from northern Wisconsin could go to India and begin and build those alliances, so that every time one people were threatened, there was an entire global movement that would rise up in support of them and help stop the threat. We could not only change the world, but quite possibly save it. Because that's where we are. This is a wholesale threat to the ability of human beings to live much longer on this planet. And so when I ran across this video, and I'm just going to play a little chunk of it for you. When I ran across this video by my good friend Steve Trash, I immediately thought back to that article about the Shuar people
in Ecuador. Just give a listen. There's some visual references. It's a visual piece. The Illusion of Sustainability is what it's called, a slideshow talk video by Steve Richardson. It's on YouTube. Go view it and like it. Maybe even comment on it. Tell him you heard about it on the horn. That's part of community building, too.
In the year 1075, people of the planet Earth, almost everyone, in fact, believed that the Earth was flat. Pancake flat. So flat, you could drive your car right off the edge and it would fall right off. This is an illusion. In the year 1475, people of the planet Earth, almost everyone, believed we were the center of the cosmos. This is an illusion. In the year 1975, people of the planet Earth believed that these pants looked good on a dude. This is an illusion. Some people today believe that you can do almost anything to the planet and it will not come back to harm us. This is an illusion. Please don't misunderstand me. The Earth is not fragile. It is dynamic, elastic, and really, really huge. But it can and is being harmed by human activity. You see, nature works in cycles. The air, the land, and water, all cycles. The same air that you breathe out gets recycled in this system, and you breathe it back in again sometime in your future. The same molecules of water that make up your body are the same water molecules that might have been part of the Pacific Ocean or a giant sequoia tree or, at some time in their past, another human being. Nature works in cycles, but we've built our economy in a straight line. We depend on energy that takes millions of years to make, can only be used one time, and pollutes every time it's used. And we misuse, abuse, and overuse natural resources. We're trying to work outside of the rules that nature has set up. Great question. It matters now for two reasons: math and hole digging. By the year 1375, there were 370 million people on the planet Earth, living, loving, beating the heck out of each other. By the year 1975, there were 4 billion people, billion with a B, people on planet Earth, living, loving, still beating the heck out of each other. By the year 2012, there were 7 billion people on the planet. Today, 7 billion people, still doing the same thing. By the year 2050, we expect there will be 10 billion people on the planet, 10 billion people on the planet Earth. In and of itself, 10 billion people hanging out on planet Earth is not really a problem. But this brings us to hole digging. A long time ago, you and I had a distant relative named Ugg. If Ugg wanted to dig a hole, he probably dug it by hand. If Ugg was smart, he'd use a rock. If he was head of the class smart, he would attach a stick to the rock and dig him some serious hole. One day, Ugg invented a shovel. The next day, he invented a front-end loader. He could dig a hole really fast and really deep. Ugg's ability to dig a hole really fast and really deep doesn't matter that much until it's multiplied by the number of Uggs on the planet. This matrix is a recipe for disaster. Yeah, uh-oh is right. Math times hole digging is a huge problem. But there is a solution. We call that solution sustainability. Glad you asked. Sustainability means that we meet the needs of today without compromising the ability of future generations to meet theirs.
Isn't that exquisitely, elegantly, simply put? By the way, the matrix that he was describing, no, it's not the red pill versus blue pill thing. Let me go back to that just so we can... because it's kind of important. Nah, let's just go on.
Times hole digging is a huge problem. But there is a solution. We call that solution sustainability. Glad you asked. Sustainability means that we meet the needs of today without compromising the ability of future generations to meet theirs.
Now, if you're talking about blowing up communities and poisoning water and toxifying air in Appalachia for current profits that are distributed primarily only to a small handful of coal company owners and Wall Street paper hustlers, if you're talking about the same thing being done in Ecuador or Bangladesh, Pakistan, or Illinois or Arizona, Alaska or Alberta, you're talking about pretty big harm to the planet, and you're talking about definitely compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. We do not have the right to steal from the future, and that is what is going on. Outright theft. To steal, take, and carry away without consent the goods, property, or things of value of another with no intent of returning them. That's one of the oldest common law definitions there is of any crime. Larceny. And whether it be the Koch brothers, the Keystone XL pipeline, Alpha Natural Resources, the Chinese gold diggers in Ecuador, or a coal baron named Chris Klein who wants to blast the Pinoki Hills into rubble and poison every drop of water in the area. No matter where we're talking about, it is, in fact, larceny. To steal, take, or carry away the goods or valuables of another with the intent to deprive the true owner thereof. And the true owner is the future. It is always the future. The present is so damned imperceptible as to barely be noticeable in the grand scheme of things. Eventually, what, 2-4 billion years from now, this will all be a cinder. And then we won't have any true owners to worry about. But until then, the true owner of everything is the future. And the future is not something to be defined by a small handful of extremely wealthy people looking to liquidate it for their present value. We have to understand this. Or else eventually they'll get to all of us. It matters not who you are or where you are, because sooner or later everything becomes scarce. And if you're sitting on top of something that is, you too will be liquidated. The scope could not possibly get any broader, nor the urgency of understanding this any more intense. So as long as we talk about reaching out to the conservation community, as high-minded and well-intentioned as they are or may be, we're screwed. I don't want to reach out to the conservation community. I want to reach out to the sitting in front of their TV community. I want to reach out to the community that goes to church on Sunday or in Wisconsin to fish fries on Friday. I want to explain to them that if they like that piece of walleye, that beautiful piece of walleye on their plate with the lovely vinaigrette coleslaw next to it and the homemade there in the tavern tartar sauce, that they had by damned better understand
that there won't be any more if they allow themselves and their communities to be liquidated. I don't need to preach that. I just want to help people understand it. Ginseng goes for princely ransoms. You can dig it here in the hills of Appalachia. If you get caught digging it out of season, they will put your ass in jail. If you blow up 500 mountains worth of ginseng, they will call you a business visionary. Larceny of the future. But in this strange and fleeting presence, in this tiny little blink that we call now, I am focused on the intense gratitude that I feel sitting here with the water still swirling around my feet. The intense gratitude that I feel and we feel here for all of you who have done as much as you can to get us back and going so we wouldn't have to miss programming. And the intense gratitude that I feel to everyone who contributes and has contributed to keep this going month in and month out. And if apologies are in order for the time that I've been away, because that is what impacts fundraising, frankly. The ability to keep this on is driven by my ability to be on the air. But the only thing that I can say is that I really am trying not to just sit behind a microphone and talk the talk. There's enough of that in the right wing for anybody. I can't sit here and talk it. If I'm not willing to go out there and walk it. So yeah, I will be gone at the end of this week, leaving Thursday, back either Sunday or Monday. But we'll have a couple of good days of broadcasting in between now and then. And I'm trying to figure out a way. I'm communicating with the folks in Wisconsin about seeing if maybe we can broadcast the panel discussion, the audio at least, via the horn. So thank you to all of you for all that you do. I'm not going away. I mean, I'm not disappearing. This is not the end of the program. I just wanted to make sure that the thanks were super adequately expressed. Ah, Jesus, Michael. Subject line, Aquatic Radio. Bob, please don't electrocute yourself. None of us want to hear Faces of Death Radio. Be careful. The boots do have rubber bottoms. And as soon as we get done this evening, I think I'm going to have to unplug the whole darn studio and cart it outside and, I don't know, maybe put it in the car or something and then make sure everything is dried out and put back together. Then we have to worry about the rest of the problem, like finding the leak and replacing the pipe. That's tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow creeps each day in its petty pace, and you know the rest that goes with it. But like I said, it is awfully nice, even under these circumstances, to be home. You hear that? That is a landline dial tone. We're not just limited to Skype now.
number is 304-658-3333. If we can keep the fundraising going, maybe I can get the toll-free number out of Hawk. 304-658-3333. If you want to join in via Skype, you're welcome to do that, too. That number, of course, it's not a number. It's an account. It's a handle. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. So feel free to jump in. We'll take a little break. Sop up a little more water and come back. It's a little damp, but this is Conversation Radio that is absolutely listener-supported. If there's any truth to be had out of, and there is a lot of truth in it, but if there's a central truth to be had out of the Peter B. Collins piece over at Truth Out, it is this. And Mr. Gibson just observed this in the chat room. From here on out, we're on our own. We will have the media we want if we fund the media we want. And you know what we can say? We did build that. And we can say it to Cumulus, and we can say it to Clear Channel, and we can say it to the religious right broadcasters, and we can say we will not be silenced. That's why conversations are so great a part of this program. It is our refusal to be silent. So we're about halfway done with the program for this evening. Time to sop, do some sopping. We will come back, take your calls, have a little conversation. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn. Light them up, 304-658-3333.
Total wisdom, never held a love I never known, and then something else. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
About 24 minutes past the hour. This is the horn. On air tonight, solely by virtue of the dogged determination of you who insist on having radio that is not punctuated by hustles for vacuum cleaners to pick up bowling balls and herbal erection tonics and, I don't know, capsules that will grow an erection on your bald pate, whatever. I'm Bob Kincaid. The lines are open, and you're free to use them as you see fit. Jump right in anytime. 304-658-3333 or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. We have exceeded, by the way, and thank you very much, we have exceeded the $1,500 threshold. Everything we do to get, in other words, basically we finished up January here on the 11th of February. And with any luck at all, February we'll see to March. But in truth, when we talk about what it takes to keep this going, there's not a lot of fluff built into that. Not a lot of wiggle room. Oh, by the way, to answer the question, that was a duo, that song. It was a song called November, by a duo named called Grace and Tony. I'm going to have to check out a lot more of their music, but I loved that song. Grace and Tony, November. Really nifty video for it, too. Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Psychoticus. Yes, indeed. It all does help immensely. Now, with all that having been said, don't think for an instant that I do not recognize that this is Moran Monday. I feel rather like a member of it, as a matter of fact, with the, the exploding pipes, and I don't dare ask what next. But it is Moran Monday, and, well, by Jove, I think we've got us a couple of potential, we got a couple of live ones here. Dandy good nominees. Marty jumped right into it. Saw something I saw as well and recognized it for the fitting subject matter for Moran Monday that it is. What was it? There's a right-wing lunatic from, of course, Texas, in the House by the name of Steve Stockman. And what was the crazy thing that he did about a month back? I ask only because it's always nice to identify the bona fides. He's bona fide. Oh, here it is. Yeah, January 23rd, 2013. Steve Stockman is the nuttiest freshman in Congress again. Oh, yeah. Among other things, Steve Stockman was the neo-maxi Zoom dweeby who compared Barack Obama to Saddam Hussein because he had children behind him when he made the speech about issuing the incredibly tepid executive orders to try to rein in some of the gun insanity in this country. And he does have some bona fides. Hi, he's bona fide. He was caught with 30 milligrams once upon a time. 30 milligrams of Valium in his underwear. According to Mother Jones, he accused an attorney general of premeditated murder, appeared on a Holocaust-denying radio show, favorably compared his constituents to Branch Davidians, and traveled to Denmark to protest climate change while wearing a red blindfold.
What, Edith?
The drug bust, by the way, happened in Wisconsin. He blamed his girlfriend for the fact that he had 30 milligrams of Valium in his tidy whiteys. He describes himself as a studerino. Really. So it should come as no surprise that our first nominee for Moran Monday, Steve Stockman, has chosen to invite the Nuge. Yes, he who wet and defecated upon himself for a couple of weeks in order to stay out of Vietnam as his honored guest for the State of the Union address tomorrow evening. I am excited to have a patriot like Ted Nugent joining me in the House chamber to hear from President Obama. The Nuge, Jesus, tweeted about the invitation. Well, there will be a freedom-addicted all-American uppity Motown guitar player facing the POTUS at the SOTU address tomorrow. Lovely. Having been contacted by Think Progress, the Secret Service offered a great big no comment. And it is now being reported that being reported by the New York Times that Nugent has said he won't be carrying a gun with him to the State of the Union. I've got to demilitarize before I go. Demilitarize? I thought demilitarizing was what he said, or was what he did when he was defecating on himself in order to stay out of Vietnam. That's demilitarizing, Nuge. Yeah. I've got to demilitarize. Well, even though he won't have his shooting gun with him, maybe he can shoot off his mouth like Joe, who's not really named Joe Wilson of South Carolina. Maybe he can holler, "You lie!" And of course, the pool coverage will be cutting over to some poor schlub's job tomorrow night on a camera.
Make sure you keep Mr. Nugent on your camera 12. You're Ted Nugent tonight. Yeah, if we catch him making any funny faces or anything, or trying to, well, who knows? Well, he's the Nuge. Now let's just make sure we've got him. We're watching him. This could be good. Let's do go to the phones. 304-658-3333 is how you reach the program, or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Hey, welcome to the program.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Pretty good. I finally kicked the hell out of this one virus I have. You know how it is today with doctors? Well, of course, you're from a small area, so you probably see the same guy all the time.
But sure. Well, I don't see any of them anymore.
Oh, but, God, that's right.
But when we do go, we get to see either a physician's assistant, a nurse practitioner, or a magician's apprentice.
Oh, yeah, a magician's apprentice. That's the important one. Yeah, it's the guy. I can't decide between the guy wants me to wave the checkbook in front of his face, and he's opposed by the guy that wants to, you know, raise his dead babies in front of me. And they call themselves doctors, you know.
Right.
My generation, the doctor was a guy, shared a corner, over a corner drugstore with his brother, the dentist, and you walked into that dentist, had an open Bunsen burner going. It was good for the smokers, you know. They could just light up. But you've been gone, man. You have been really on the road.
I'm not complaining, but I am war plum out, Bill.
Yeah, I imagine. But, I just had to call, and I got nothing great to say. You sure?
No, you're doing fine so far.
I got to thank one of our buddies, a couple of them, actually. Isaac is one. The gentleman from up around Akron is another one.
Oh, Thomas?
Pardon me?
Thomas?
Yeah. They helped me get these computers running good. And Isaac and I have discovered music. He's heavily involved with a lot of the real late model soul people. Well, the guys that did Maggot Brain and such, and he's been around them a lot. And for me and him, that music was it, you know. Is that when we talk? But a lot of politics, too. But I'm just disgusted. This guy Nugent, I knew so many guys like that didn't want to go, pulled every trick in the book, and now they've forgotten all about it. Now they were standing in the front line ready to sign up. Well, one of my buddies.
No, please continue.
Well, one of my buddies' dad from World War II. So many of those guys couldn't talk about what they saw. My second wife's father was a Marine, served out in Saipan, Tinian, and Ewell. And when he talks to my ex-brother-in-laws, or did, in his old age, the kids told me he really opened up with a lot of truth of what he saw, a lot of things that he saw he didn't like, that he saw dumb. But that's the way it goes, I guess. And he was a quiet kind of a guy. You know, there's a good number of those Second World War guys who really laid it out there for what they felt for the country. They were quiet about it. They came home and they wouldn't talk about it. And the problem there is, if you don't clear out a lot of stuff, it'll keep haunting you. And that's the problem there. What do you think of Dennis going to work for Fox?
I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly one expects that he will be a far more cogent defender of progressive ideas than Alan Colmes was.
Yeah.
Because, bless his heart, Colmes tried, but he was just kind of a doormat.
Yeah, Colmes.
And the other thing I like about it, Bill, is that it looks like it looks like that in paying Dennis, I guess you could say that in paying Dennis, they're using the money that they otherwise would have been using to pay Caribou Barbie, you know, Godzilla from Wasilla.
God, you mean she couldn't steal enough on her own?
I guess not. I mean, they ditched her. They didn't renew her contract.
Oh, she was still nowhere. She couldn't even lie correctly.
No, she... you got to work hard to be that stupid. And she apparently was putting in the time.
How are people, the right people, signing on to the ACAC?
You know, it introduced last Wednesday. We were there for it. The day before it launched, it had two original sponsors, and I think six co-sponsors. And that's when Agnes and I went over and dropped off materials at every office of everyone who had signed on to it in the last Congress, and a few extras. And the next day, well, the long and the short of it is, it's been reintroduced. It is now HR 526, and it has 24 co-sponsors. So basically, we started out right where we ended. And we've even got a couple of new folks on there. So there's a couple of people that haven't signed on yet, but we expect them to. And now we can start pushing into reaching new people. And that's what we're doing. And we're also working on getting it introduced in the Senate.
Yeah, it's about, you know, all you can do is keep pushing.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't know, you know. Well, I know what it takes to wake people up, but I'm talking to people around here. People from the eastern counties who are finally realizing what fracking is.
Yeah, and
they've been out here buying stuff, you know. Buying land. Actually, Buell County, Geneva, that area.
Right.
Which is full of... Some of the best peaches in the world grow out there.
Really?
As they do along the shore of Ontario.
Peaches? I had no idea.
In the fall. Oh, yeah. Peaches in Ontario when they're harvesting, and which I think is around August, September. Just great stuff. And there are guys growing them out here that Lake County used to be a big, big growing area. It's still a lot of wine out here. A lot of wine country.
Yeah, no idea.
I got nothing much to say because, excuse me, I just gave my opinion of the Republican Party.
Yep.
you know, I just was shocked that you were alive. I didn't know. Because I know you have been out there doing God's work.
Well, we tried to be on the air as much as we possibly could, but without the phones here, it cuts down on the interactivity of the conversation, and that makes it a lot less fun.
Well, I still enjoyed listening to other folks, and they all had something to say good, and I'll clear the line, let them go, but I just wanted to say I wanted to hear your voice live.
Well, I appreciate that, Bill.
Oh, good, buddy.
We can thank everybody who pitched in to make sure that we were able to be here tonight.
Well, you keep pushing. That's all you can do.
Thank you, Bill. We will. And I hope we talk soon.
Take it easy, bud.
All right. See ya. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, from Cleveland. Lines open, 304-658-3333. And we go now to the next line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Good evening.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin? Good to hear from you.
Good to be on the phone. Glad that you've got something other than the Skype, since I've had so many problems with my computer.
Yeah, I saw. I guess Skype isn't fully accessible just quite yet, is it?
Well, that in its problems wouldn't be that in itself wouldn't be a problem. It's the fact that I sent them, you know, like where they tell you to go to support or whatever, and I sent them things saying I need help and haven't heard anything from them. That's where I'm upset. Now, the other part of it is that I just got a new headset microphone the other day, figuring that part of the problem might be with my connection to the regular plug-in to the computer, and I went for the USB port headset, and it still didn't work on Skype. So, you know, I don't know what the problem is. Accessibility probably is one issue, but other than that, I'm not really sure. I can't get into all of Skype, you know, and on my computer because of the accessibility issues to find the exact spot that I need to be on.
I can't imagine what the learning curve is, Kevin, just to do what you're able to do. I mean, it just blows me away.
It's a bit of a learning curve, but if you put yourself in the position of if you had to do things without your sight, say you're operating the computer without a screen. In fact, a guy just told me last week that he had to do this. His computer went out or something, and he had to do everything by voice, just like I do. And it's tough to learn it, but eventually you get the hang of it, just like anything else. And, you know, disability is disability. My disability is no different than your disability. And I don't know what your disability is because we all have them, you know.
Right. It's not so much that I really do like the phrase that is in the common parlance that we are different, that people are differently abled. I think it was Kate who first taught that to me.
Yep. And I don't mind people saying handicapped, you know, that doesn't bother me, or disabled or anything else. I've got my things to deal with, they've got theirs, you know, so, but I've got to thank, I think it's Isaac and Thomas too as well. Speaking of that, they had put me in touch with Bill on kind of a three-way email, and I emailed Bill back and said, you know, if you ever need to get in contact with me about anything, feel free. And I loved it because Bill sent me a one-word email back, thanks, with an exclamation mark. And I thought, that is Bill, you know.
Yeah.
Short, sweet, and to the point. So, but I've got to thank both of them, too, as well, because they've tried to help me over the computer and over the phone, but I really have got to get someone here in with me inside the house and, you know, work at it from that angle.
Right.
So.
Well, I hope you're able to.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking on this Senate Bill 5. Is it House Bill or Senate Bill?
It's H.R., House Resolution, H.R. 526.
Have you thought about doing another petition on either change or signon.org?
There's one floating around out there right now that our colleague and friend Maria Gonneau authored, and that's where most of the focus is right now.
I'm going to have to look that up. I might have saw it.
I think it's a change.org petition.
Yeah, and that's another funny thing on my computer. I'm not.
Or no, it may be the White House petition site. I'm sorry, I don't have it right at the. Right off the top of my head.
Well, gee, if it's on the White House petition site, I can just go over there and sign my name to the secessionist movement there, you know?
Yeah. Well, we do need, among other things, you know, if we get 25,000 signatures or something in a fairly short amount of time, we will immediately, or we will be entitled to some sort of White House response.
Yeah.
I have my guess what that response is. But still.
Well, you never know. At least they have to give you a response. And that's the nice thing about that White House petition is that they have to give you that response. Unlike some of the other petitions that just float around there. Although, on the other petitions, the nice thing about them is you can leave that petition up almost indefinitely on some of the sites and get 100, 200, 300,000 signatures before you turn it in. And so, you know, one of our local people has one of the gun rights or lack of gun rights petitions, I guess you'd say. Not even lack of gun rights, just sensible gun laws petitions out there. and I know there's 100 of them out there, but it was local. So I immediately sent an email out to friends of mine on my contact list about going and signing this petition. It may not mean much in the long run, but it's you stating that you're for this legislation. And I look at petitions as a great way for me to vent, in addition to making a public statement. And, you know, I know I've heard Mike Malloy say sometimes that he's not a big fan of petitions, but I don't look at
it. Well, it depends on what's done with them, I think, Kevin.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're, you know, if they're just out there as a way to vent, then yeah. But if they are out there to be delivered to someone as proof of interest in an issue, well, that's another story altogether.
Especially when you walk into the congressman's office or senator's office with it and plump it down on their desk, and you know, this is proof we've got the backing behind us, and if you want to lose 300,000 potential voters in our district, that's just our district, you know, then go ahead. But, and they do look at that and say, maybe I better think about this a little. Depending on the senator, a guy like Stockman, you know.
Yeah, he's in the House, right.
Yeah, I don't know if crazy defined, I don't know if that's the proper word. Some mixture of crazy, insane, and delusional.
Don't forget mean-spirited.
Yeah, that too. I'm glad you brought it up, though. That was one of the things before the show that I was hoping that you would bring up, because it's just so... These people have no respect for anything. I've never seen anything like it. You know, if this was George Bush giving the State of the Union and a liberal did the exact same to them, they would be crying left and right.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And they would be crying how it's an insult to the presidency and how it's an insult to this, that, and the other. We just laugh at them when they do it. You know, I mean, it's...
Well, in point of fact, I think I ran across an example of that earlier today. Let me see if I can call this up. It happened on one of the Sunday Blabfest shows. Former Bush administration spokes creep or whatever she was, Nicole Wallace, was blathering away, as is her wont. I think it was on This Week with George Snuffleupagus. You know, it's a pity he's not as invisible as the real Snuffleupagus.
Yeah.
Let me just scroll along here. I can find the exact quote. It's kind of precious, because it speaks, if I recall correctly, Kevin, it speaks to exactly what you're describing. Oh, this computer that's sitting in the wet floor is running a little slow.
Can't imagine why. A little water, you know, should be good for it.
But, here it is. Yeah, yeah. This is the quote.
Yes, and it's slightly hilarious that people have all this patience for talking about the drone stuff.
Right.
People have all this patience for illegal architecture to be crafted after the fact. If this had been President George W. Bush's administration revealing that this many drone strikes are going on, there would be impeachment hearings underway. So the hypocrisy sort of has Republicans steaming. Did I miss something, Kevin? Did I miss those Bush impeachment hearings when they lied us into a war?
Yeah. It's like, did you miss the last decade?
Well, did I hallucinate Nancy Pelosi saying, well, impeachment is off the table?
Mm-hmm.
No matter how long and how loudly Dennis Kucinich yelled from the rooftops,
the laws and the Constitution of this country were being trampled underfoot by an administration that described the Constitution. And George Bush, these are George Bush's words, it's a quote, described the Constitution as, quote, a goddamn piece of paper.
Yep. And no doubt if Mr. Bush had the ability to, he would have used it for toilet paper. That's what he thought of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about Obama, and we rightly so, we criticize him for the things he's done, but Bush got away with a whole lot more and with a lot less thought. And, of course, he was just a puppet for Dick Cheney. Everyone knows that. But still, it's part of that rich elite crowd out there that, you know, we can do anything. But it's like the ginseng you were talking about. If you go out and get that out of season, you're done in jail. But if they destroy a mountain to do that, or five mountains, you're called a businessman.
No. You're beyond that. You're a job creator.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a visionary. You're protecting national security by leveraging our coal resources. It's going to make us a Saudi Arabia of coal.
Yep.
These are all things that I've heard said, okay?
Yep. It's just, we just got to keep working. That's the only way to do it, is just to keep working, not get deterred from these slideshows that are Republican comments, such as what you just said there, and just keep working, because what you were saying at the beginning of the show about, and I forget the quote, having a mind blank where you got it from, but talking about the fact that the regeneration of the earth, you remember what I'm talking about, the quote you gave right at the beginning of the show?
Off the top of my head, no. But give us give the chat room a minute, and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, it was that quote you gave. I almost asked you for the link for it, and now I can't even think of it. But it was talking about how their idea is to destroy the earth, and instead of destroying the earth, the future generations.
Oh, that wasn't a quote. That was just me babbling.
I thought I heard you say you saw the quote somewhere. It ought to be a quote. You ought to put that on, write that down. Seriously. You ought to put it on.
Oh, was that from the Steve Richardson video? Or are you talking about, let me see if I can pull it up here.
You were talking about how we're building, the building of the, if the larceny, if we take it, if we...
No, that was not a quote. That was just me.
Oh, Bob, you need to put that down. Seriously. You need to go back and put that on something, because it's so profound how we're robbing future generations for a little bit of greed and profit. And...
Yeah, that was based on what my old buddy Steve Richardson, Steve Trash, had said about the fact that sustainability... here it is. Here's the definition. It's coming up in a second. Sustainability means meeting today's needs without compromising the ability of future generations to meet theirs. That's the quote.
Yep. And then also the preservation instead of conservation. Was that a quote from Roosevelt, or was that...
That was John Muir talking to Theodore Roosevelt.
Okay, but
he said we've got to get away from this notion of conservation and start talking about preservation.
Yeah. I think those two things ought to be somewhere in, you know, where they can be seen by others, I guess is what I'm saying, because I think both of them are extremely profound and extremely valuable, because... You know, we hear the word conservation bandied about so much. We need to conserve. Well, you're right. It's not a matter of conservation. It's a matter of preservation and letting the land be as it was and is and not taking away the land from future generations. You know, we've had a big push out here out west, and probably across the country for that matter, of opening up federal lands to fracking.
Right. Well, see, and that's in the essence of the idea as it is understood of conservation, that conservation means using stuff up judiciously. But in the end, it still gets used up.
Yep.
Whereas preservation says that we are going to keep things, that some things just deserve to be kept as they are. You know, like the El Condor region of Ecuador has tremendous potential if left alone for all kinds of small farm agribusiness, ecotourism. You know, there's a reference in the Salon story to, for instance, the fact that ecotourism to the region has become popular among people who study herbal medicine, and they go there to find out what the well-known hallucinogen ayahuasca does for people.
Yep.
And well,
do what?
It certainly seems more reasonable to me to get long. And again, it's long term. Maybe there is an element of conservation to it, Kevin, because it is long term usage of the land designed as such that the land be long term useful.
Well, it's not only that,
but I don't even like the word use.
No, because what you're talking about, what I heard you talking about, is the fact of the cycle of the rain in that. If you take away that cycle of water going to you, to the earth, to rain and back, if you take away 2 inches a year out of that cycle, that affects not only that region, that potentially affects the whole earth. We're seeing that today with I hate to use the word climate change, but we're seeing that today with that. Out here in Colorado, we just got our first decent snowfall of the year here in Colorado Springs. You can't tell me at this point that climate, quote-unquote, change is not happening.
But you know, the problem, Kevin, is that we are up against so much manifest ignorance rising to the level of manifest stupidity. For instance, our buddy Jim shot me a note last week explaining that the guy for whom Titanic Tuesday is named, that Titanic intellect,
yep,
he recently explained to one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking listeners.
Oh, wait a minute. This is going to be profound, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is a sit-down. This is a sit-down, strap-in, put the tennis ball in your mouth and wrap the duct tape around your head moment, because there's going to be some screaming going on. He explained that Germany is having a revolution in green energy, renewable energy, you know, solar and windmills.
Right.
Because Germany, this is the sit-down part, gets more sunlight than the United States.
Oh, God.
Do you remember, you were sighted for some time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you remember the old black and white episodes of Bewitched?
Uh-huh, yeah, sure.
And, you know, there's a lot of drinking that went on in that show.
Yep.
And every now and then, Samantha would be sitting in a bar, and they always had the same wonderful old character actor sitting next to her getting loaded.
Yep.
And she'd be there, and then she'd wiggle her nose, and then she'd be gone. And the drunk sitting next to her at the end of the bar would just push his drink away and get up and walk out. Or the cartoons where the guy takes out his hip flask and just turns it over and pours it out and throws it over his shoulder and he's done.
Yep.
Well, that's, you know, when you hear that kind of stuff, that's where my mind takes me, because I don't know how I'm just globinated at how you begin to, I mean, because I want to scream. See, I'm making little strange strangled forest animal noises now just thinking about it.
Well, that's because Germany has more sunlight than we do here in America.
And he believes it too, I'm sure.
I would assume so. He's about dumber than a box of rocks. But the more important thing is that you know, Emery and Marveline are sitting out there going, I knowed it all along. Yeah. You know, Germany sits on roughly the same latitudinal line as Alaska.
Yep. Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, because this country was largely initially populated by Europeans, we have this notion, and because they were able to get here by boat, we have this notion, Kevin, that Europe is just, well, I mean, we've got a phrase for it, across the pond.
Right.
That it exists on the same, in the same position on the planet as North America does.
Yep.
When in point of fact, it, you know, way back when I was just a, you know, little baby DJ, and I got to take that first trip to Europe, it blew my mind to realize that my home in Alabama was on roughly an equivalent line with Rome, you know, with the sunny Mediterranean.
Yep.
And that's, you know, about as far south in Europe as you can get and still be Europe.
Yep.
But yep. Germany's got more sunshine than we do here in America.
Well, apparently he doesn't remember the stories of World War II about the German winters and the POWs suffering through those winters, and that's just a small portion of what we've heard about the German winters.
And you know, Kevin, I know because I even had a Skype contact from one of our an American expatriate living in Germany, and we've got German listeners. And whenever this podcast goes up and they're listening to it and they get to the part where I talk about the American radio host who says that Germany gets more sunlight than the United States of America, I don't know what swearing in German sounds like, but I think if I just stuck my, if at the right time I just walked outside and listened, I could hear distantly some, you know, probably professional grade swearing going on. That is the level of stupid that this, that people of decent brains have to contend with in this country. That is why we can't do anything about climate change. That's why we can't do anything about anything. Because the right wing has leveraged all the stupid.
Well, they proved that 8 years ago when Sarah Palin was a presidential candidate.
Oh, sweet Jesus. I was out today, you know, doing the stuff to pay bills, and we were in a line to turn into the shopping center behind a Mercedes-Benz S430 or something like that, okay?
Yep.
Nice-looking car.
Yeah.
And it still had a round sticker up at the top center of the rear windshield that said McCain Palin. And of course the obligatory West Virginia license plate. And I looked at Agnes and I said, oh, please let me follow him. I just want to see him get out of the car. I want to see what they look like. I promise I won't say anything to him, honey. Bob, go park the car.
Yeah.
She's such a killjoy sometimes. No, but I did. Because I expected him to get out of the car in clown clothes. Okay, so you voted for McCain and Palin 8 years ago. 4 years ago, I'm sorry. You voted for McCain and Palin 4 years ago, but we've had 4 years in which Republicans have even figured out that she was a moron.
Yeah, when Fox News fires you, there's really a problem.
Yeah, and when 4 years later, you're still riding around with that sticker on your car, you know, you're trying... Remember the old T-shirts that had the finger pointing either one way or the other?
I'm with stupid.
I'm with stupid.
Yep.
Well, that McCain-Palin sticker is the modern... No, that's I am stupid.
Exactly.
I mean, and it's not just I am stupid, Kevin. It's I am stupid and damn proud of it.
Yep.
Huh!
But, Bob, that seriously is why the world looks at this country and shakes their head. It's a collective, like you're saying, the Germans... That's why we do not have one of the many reasons, I shouldn't say the sole reason, more important things like starting unneeded wars across the globe. But that's one of the reasons is our attitude toward the rest of the world. We think we know it all while we know very little. And the rest of the world has figured out that they don't know a whole lot either, but they're trying to learn more. And we're still going on as if we know everything. So, very sad. Very sad that someone 4 years from that election and what's gone on since then and Sarah Palin, all of what Sarah Palin said, if I had that sticker on my car, I'd be embarrassed.
But all of these things, you know, they're like icebergs. You know, most of the iceberg is under the water. When you see one car with McCain Palin on it, you know that there are millions of them.
Yep.
You know, when you see... Sorry about all the site references. I apologize.
Oh, no problem.
When you see one cockroach...
Yep.
You know that you've got thousands of them.
Exactly. Yep.
Now, see, lucky for us, we don't get fooled with by the right-wing hate media, or else there'd be a story tomorrow. And Bob Kincaid compares Republicans to cockroaches. Yes! Absolutely.
When asked if the quote was correct, Kincaid replied, "Yes, absolutely." Oh, God.
Yeah, see, those progressives, they're not very civil. They want civility, but then they talk like that.
Nothing uncivil about that. I could call them a lot worse names. So... I just keep doing what you're doing, though.
Well, we're trying to. We are absolutely trying to. And just, you know, this is more off-air stuff. I don't know what's going on with that PayPal business you're dealing with. I mean, bobkincaid@gmail.com.
Yep.
Or, you know, you just go to the Horn site and push the button.
Well... back then,
if your access software works that way.
Yeah, well, back then when I went to the Horn site, it wouldn't allow me to do it for some reason, so I just went through PayPal. You've kind of updated your website now, and I think it'll probably work on there now, but either way, I'll resend it. It's just I wanted to send it to you and see if you visually could see any problems with it. And it baffles me just as much. It's the thing. I sent that donation to him before. No problem. So why this time would it come back? I don't get it.
Yeah, nor I. Oh, see, okay. Marty is piling on now. He said, by the way, that comparison insults the cockroaches.
Oh, and you're trying to flood yours out.
Oh, shut up.
Have you accessed the main? Is there a main shut off valve?
Oh yeah, and it's shut off now.
So
it was shut off before.
Yeah.
But what we didn't know was when we turned it back on. I'll be honest. It did not occur to me. It has never occurred to me to go through and check all the plumbing before. But it was winter. It did get cold, but it shouldn't have frozen.
No. Was it PVC pipe?
Yeah.
So plastic, right? Or PVC.
Yeah, PVC.
Metal. It wasn't a metal pipe.
No. I'd be in a real world of hurt the idea of trying to sweat copper. And you know, you can't solder copper if there's any water anywhere near it.
Nope.
So, yeah, at least all I've got to do is fool with PVC, but Jesus, the job.
Oh,
aye.
Well, I wish the best.
Yeah, Calgon, take me away.
Well, at least it is PVC, so, you know, like you said, you don't have to do all that sweating of the copper and waiting for everything to dry out and, you know, to get that done.
Oh, by the way, John Fox just checked in with me and told me that the PayPal widget does work over at the website.
Well, it worked before. It's just with my accessible equipment. Before, it didn't work. You know, it baffles me as to why it got sent back, though, but I'll resend it. So,
well, bless your heart. We do appreciate it. And, you know, the whole Horn family has hauled us out of the fire, and we're, you know, we've got a fighting chance.
Well, I live for the day that I'll be able to make one of those challenges. Keep hoping I'll win the lottery or something. And I probably will about a week before I die. You know, my aunt gave up playing them.
Now, that, by God, is the definition of optimism, Kevin.
Yeah, I know it. But, hey, at least I'll have won it, you know. So, but seriously, you know, this is something, your show is something that's important to me because of the conversational radio aspect, but also because of the informational aspect. And I would not have known about mountaintop removal at all were it not for your show. So, you know, I would have been one of those people that was totally ignorant of it even now if I had not known of your show. So, you know, when you can get that kind of information from a show, and I venture to say you're the only talk show host in West Virginia that's talking about it as well.
There is, I mean, from a liberal or progressive standpoint, there's one other, and his name is Bobby Nelson, and he's a really, really good guy down in Huntington.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they had any other liberal talk shows.
There is actually a little bitty progressive radio station in Huntington, West Virginia.
Good, good.
But I can't get on there because, well, we say naughty words.
Yeah, just have to have the little button.
That little button, Kevin, that's a little $4,000 button.
Well, in that case, you just have to make sure you don't say the naughty words.
No, you don't get anywhere near terrestrial radio without one of those things because the first violation is $475,000.
Oh, yeah. It's six.
Remember, they upped the fine amount after the nipple of doom back in the Super Bowl a few years ago.
Yeah, that's another thing I liked about Europe when I was over there. They're much more liberal on their commercials, as I'm sure you've seen.
Oh, yeah. Most of the rest of the world is. You know, we and Iran and Saudi Arabia, we've got a problem.
Yeah. Yep, but we look at Iran and Saudi Arabia both and think of them as Stone Age people, you know, not only because we bombed Iraq back to the Stone Age, but because we feel like they're so unintelligent compared to us. But when we look...
Well, remember when that phrase was... Remember when bombed back to the Stone Age was used with regard to Afghanistan? And some right-wing smartass of the Bush administration said, well, they can't do that. They're already there. And yeah. Donald Rumsfeld was running around complaining that there was nothing left that was any fun to bomb in Afghanistan. Nothing but a bunch of mud huts.
Yeah. Don't remind me. I consider that whole eight-year period of the Bush regime to be definitely... I used to think Nixon was the worst presidency in my personal history of now 53 years, but right now I have to say the Bush presidency was the worst by far. Nixon at least had some intelligence.
Oh, hell, Nixon was a liberal.
Yeah, compared to Bush.
We got the EPA out of Nixon. Nixon was the last president to actually talk about something called a minimum living wage.
Yep. And if you remember, one other thing I've always had a fondness for him for, do you remember he instituted price freezes on things during that whole recession period?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if it hadn't been for the fact that he was just batshit insane and paranoid and delusional, walking around talking to the paintings and
leaning over conspiratorially to Kissinger and saying things, Henry, they just didn't understand me. Yeah, or sitting around talking to Billy Graham, Billy, it's the Jews. The Jews control Hollywood and they're destroying America, Billy. Oh, I agree, Mr. President. But see, that's you know, in a more general, universal sense, Kevin, that's a warning. That's a warning to us about not thinking, any time you catch yourself thinking, can't get any worse.
Yep.
The Republican Party will always find a way to prove you wrong. Just when you thought that you've got all the way down into the basement, you know, where the creepy shit happens in the horror movies.
Yep.
All of a sudden you'll hear, you know, and the next trap door will open. And it's the abattoir is all the way down.
Well, I'm certain in the next 100 years we will have another presidency that's just as bad, but I certainly hope not.
Somewhere out there, tonight, there's a Republican who has the power, and it's kind of like one of those dark side of the force powers, Kevin. The power to make George W. Bush look like Marcus Aurelius. In fact, I love you know, everybody knows now, I love reading Charlie Pierce's blog over at Esquire. I love his nickname for George W. Bush. C plus Augustus. It's just magnificent. But no, that Republican is out there. I mentioned that I think it's Finnish, that film Iron Sky the other night that I found so delightful, that is all predicated upon the reelection efforts of President Sarah Palin, who was elected president in 2016.
God forbid.
Yeah, that'll...
Perish the thought, whatever, throw salt over your left shoulder, something. You know, whatever.
But it doesn't have to be her. There are rumblings in Minnesota that Michelle Bachmann may challenge Al Franken for his Senate seat. Yeah, let that one rattle for a little bit.
Well, somewhere she's been elected because of the congressional district she's in, plus the gerrymandering. So I don't think she could. She might win the primary, but I don't think she could beat Franken.
I mean, the Senate seat that's being vacated by Tom Harkin of Iowa.
Yep.
The leading contender for that seat in the Senate, that august body. The world's most exclusive country club, the leading contender in Iowa for that Senate seat being vacated by the decent progressive Tom Harkin, is Steve King.
Scary.
Steve King, who compares immigrants to dog breeding. Steve King, who said that America would be better if the homosexuals would just stop acting so gay. That's Steve King.
Expect Steve Stockman to run for president in 2016.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, I hope they prevent him from coming in tomorrow night. I really do.
No, they're going to let him in. They're going to let him in.
Well, I certainly hope this time, if someone shouts out something like, you lie, the House police, whatever they're called, will quietly walk over and remove the person that does it, because, you know, if that was a liberal doing that, you wouldn't only be removed, you'd be beaten and removed.
The sounds of pearls being clutched would be like castanets across the country.
Exactly, exactly.
Kevin, it's awful good to talk to you. It's been too long. You take care, and I hope we'll talk again soon, all right?
All right, Bob. Thanks for sharing and talking, and I do appreciate it.
It's always a joy.
So, and keep doing what you're doing.
Trying.
Okay.
Thanks. Oh, and that's another thing. I've been mercifully relieved, like starting on Thursday in D.C., I somewhere along the way, on Tuesday or Wednesday, I shook the wrong hand, and got some sort of ungodly head cold, most of which is gone by now. And I say mercifully, because you didn't want to hear that.
Well, I'm Bob Kincaid. Welcome to the radio show.
It was not nice. It is Moran Monday, and we do have lines open if you want to get in the conversation. 304-658-3333. If you have a specific Moran nominee for this Moran Monday, don't hide your light under a bushel, but pick up the phone and let your light so shine that it will shine upon your Moran, and we can know Moranity for what it is. But no, we've got Morans. Oh Jesus, we've got Morans. It's not very often that we have Moran Monday nominations or nominees coming from Oregon. But by God, we got them today. And I'm not sure who the actual nominees should be. Because on the one hand, a few hundred, as the story is being reported, a few hundred gun goobers demonstrated and rallied outside the Oregon State Capitol this past Friday. Okay, I'm all right with that. The right to peacefully assemble and petition for redress of grievances? Sure. First Amendment guy, that's me. They brought their guns, you know, to show how peaceful they could be with their shooting arms. Not kidding. And here's part B of this particular Moran Monday nomination. Oregon state law allows people who have concealed carry permits to openly carry deadly firearms inside public buildings. Thus, the gun goobs who were protesting and demonstrating at the state house in Oregon carried their guns into the state house. Now compare this with Wisconsin, where the Republicans have rigged things in such a way as to not allow a camera, a book, a notepad and pen, none of that into the chambers of the assembly or the maybe the state senate as well. Huh. So, like I said, it's a double-bitted Moran nomination, this story out of Oregon. One, the insecure, culturally terrified freaks who felt like they had to take their shooting guns with them to go and peacefully demonstrate in support of their rights that aren't being abridged by anybody anywhere. Or the Oregon legislature that somewhere along the way wrote a bill that allows people who have concealed carry permits not to conceal their weapons, but to carry them openly in the corridors of the state capitol. This is going to work out so well. Why do they have that law in Oregon? Ask our friends at the National Republican Rifle Association. It's about 8:30. Got about, I'd say, 25 minutes of good conversation left in the program if you want to get involved. 304-658-3333. See who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, big time.
Hey, Andy.
How you doing?
Man, I'm wore out, stressed out. But I'm here.
You had a little problems with your pipes, huh? A little cold there?
Yeah, a little cold, a little wet, a little couple of inches of water flowing around the computers. You know, that uninterruptible power supply is making me a little nervous.
How much snow did you get?
Oh, no snow. I mean, there was snow. Well, we weren't here for it. It got down to blue-ass cold.
Wow.
But, hell, it was 60 degrees here today.
Oh, wow. I know over the weekend my mom got quite a bit of snow.
Well, she was probably she was on the south side of the storm that hit the Northeast, right?
She's in northern New Jersey.
Yeah.
So they got quite a bit of snow. I know my brother actually is one of those guys that runs the trucks.
Oh man,
he was running all night.
Yeah, that's the. I heard some governor saying, "Well, you know, these snowplow drivers, they live to plow snow, so this is their time."
Now overtime.
Oh yeah.
Cha-ching, you know, just rack up the dollars. But, God, I wouldn't want to do it. God, that's an enormous amount of pressure. You know, you got to be on the ball the whole time.
Oh, yeah, and, I mean, frankly, it looks, it's a terrifying, terrifying thing.
Wouldn't want to run somebody over with one of those things.
No, and I wouldn't want to, I've seen, like, the footage of the guys who plow in the California mountain passes where, you know, you get the 2 and 3 footers. From out of nowhere. Ugh. Pass.
I remember I used to live in Colorado and some of those mountain passes. Guys, the snow would be way over the truck. I mean, you're talking 12-foot drifts or 15-foot drifts to have to go through. Oh, man. That's real work, moving that kind of snow.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, I don't know if you noticed, but... in the Czech Republic, they had their first elections. I think it was on Saturday, the 26th. Nice that they do it on the weekends, too. Most civilized countries that actually want people to vote. But it was kind of is interesting. I don't know if there's a guy named Miloš Zeman was the guy who won. He was a social democrat. So he was the more left-wing candidate. He was going against a guy named Karl Schwarzenberg, which is more the right-wing aristocrat.
Mm-hmm.
And Zeman won by about 55% to 45%. But the interesting thing about that race is, you know, in our country, the rural areas are usually the much more reactionary conservative, right?
Right.
In the Czech Republic, the rural areas almost exclusively go for the social democrats. That's where the communists actually are the farmers and the rural people, the people with less income, go for the have more of the communist leanings. And it's the people in the city, actually, and the younger people that vote to the right. You know, completely the urban areas go for the right winger, and the rural areas go for the lefty. Just kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
And we don't have that here.
But, you know, I was talking about that story out of Ceylon about the people in the El Condor region there, that indigenous tribe. And one of the things that was pointed out in this article was the fact that the guy who's running Ecuador right now was elected as a leftist. And so we, you know,
Correa, isn't it?
Yeah. And so we have to be very careful. Because I'm beginning to think that none of the labels really matter anymore, because he's behaving like a classical, typical neoliberal, and he's sold out an entire chunk of his country and the people who live on it to the Chinese who want to come and do environmentally responsible gold mining.
Yeah, see how long that lasts.
And the indigenous people are saying, you know, they'll have to kill us to get everyone. They'll have to kill every one of us to get the gold. That's the name of the story.
Wow. Well, it's just like the Canadian indigenous people.
Well, and there's a Canadian outfit that wants to mine the gold, too.
Well, you know, the Canadian country as a whole, by the Financial Times, is voted the most business-friendly place on the planet is actually Canada. That's where people voted in the Financial Times. The best place to do business is Canada, so as far as neoliberal policies go. You know, that regime that's in control now is getting the job done for the business folks. I'm surprised they can't get that pipeline to go to the Pacific. You know, the XL pipeline.
Yeah, but apparently there's a significant pushback to that idea.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
And I don't know, maybe they can't engineer it through the Yukon.
Or
I think it's because of the indigenous uprising. I thought the people there don't want it, and it would just be too difficult.
Yeah, I mean, the Idle No More movement is huge, and of course it is getting underreported, but it is a monumental movement. You've got native peoples out there declaring that treaties have been broken and abrogated.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 21st century, that has real meaning. On the other hand, and I was deeply disturbed by this, I read the story last week while I was still in D.C. about the Crow people in Montana who just voted to open up their tribal lands to the tune of millions of acres or something, if I'm getting the numbers right, for strip mining, for coal.
Oh, gee.
And it, you know, that's, yeah, right, that's the same thing. Ah, damn it. Yeah, it's a kick the furniture moment. Because when I compare the determined resistance of the Ojibwe people that I've been blessed to interact with in Wisconsin to that kind of conduct, come on, please. You know, this is, you know, if white folks come to you and say, we're going to bring prosperity by blowing up your land, that's, you know, that's smallpox blankets of a different variety. It's still death, it's still poisonous, and it's still going to be absolutely destructive. Jesus.
Yeah, you should get a chance this weekend to bring up your H.R. 526.
Oh, great.
Hague Act at a town hall meeting. Coming up, and I'll definitely let that known. I was looking at the press release you put out, so you got five Congress people from California. You had 10 last time with H.R. 5959, so I hope you get more to come online.
I think we will. I mean, we were really, like I said, just absolutely tickled, Andy, to come out of the blocks with two original sponsors and 24 co-sponsors. That was a pretty huge launch for this.
So that's what you got, 24, huh? I was going to count that, and I didn't get a chance yet to count the.
And as soon as we get back and do some more work, there will be more.
Right. Well, it's nice to see you got Gerard Huffman in the Marin County area, who's a new guy. I wasn't sure how good he would be, even though I guess his past, he's been an environmental lawyer. So that's good that he jumped right out of the blocks and supported that, because he took Lynn Woolsey's seat.
Right.
That's nice to see.
And then, of course, we lost Filner because he became what, mayor of San Diego or something?
Yeah. That's what I heard. I guess he was in the Central Coast.
And then Kucinich and Henchy are out of the Congress, so you know that's three.
Right.
It's really great because we're starting out where we were after the work that we did in the short little remainder of the Congress as it was. We don't have all the same co-sponsors, so we need to bring some of the other ones back on board, and then lo and behold, we'll have around 30. And 30 is a huge number for a pushback against the industry, and a matter of standing up for people's human rights.
You know, it's just nice to be out there, period, and keep the bill going. I mean, no question about it. I didn't tell you, but the last time I actually got in front of one of the staffers, actually it wasn't the last time, but a time before, I got in front of one of the staffers and was trying to talk up your bill at that time. It was H.R. 5950. I don't know if I told you on the air, but the woman goes to me, this is a staffer for Jackie Speier. What do you care about those? She goes, what do you care about those people in West Virginia? They're so far away.
Oh, Jesus.
My jaw almost dropped.
Did you have to bite your tongue into hamburger?
Oh my! I couldn't believe she said that to me. What do you care about people so far away for? And I go, who the hell hired you to do this job? And what idiot put you in this position to be one of her staffers? Jesus Christ!
Yeah, we still need to get her on board.
Don't you understand? They're people. You know, they're human beings, let alone they're Americans, to top it off. Jesus. And my grandfather, I have a feeling for this because my grandfather was a coal miner. in the Wilkes-Barre-Hazleton area, so I always feel for, I know you couldn't stand it.
Yeah, those, and the Pennsylvania anthracite mines?
Yeah, that were dug in there. And it was tough. I mean, that's brutal. Freaking a brutal lifestyle. No question about it.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody really has a comprehension of how brutal that the hand loading, and because that would go back to the days of hand loading coal, you know, right. down in the mine with a mule and a car, and sitting there with a shovel and shoveling coal that had been blasted, shoveling coal into the cart and then hauling the cart out at the end of the day with your check on, you know, with your check tag on it to get it weighed so you could be paid by the ton.
Wow.
That's what the title.
Man, that was, you know, so dirty. God, the longevity of people doing that had to be so short. Just so short.
Right, and of course the coal industry resisted the idea.
Black coal.
Yeah. But the industry resisted the idea of black lung.
Right. No, that didn't. You know, that didn't happen. That wasn't their fault.
Right. Wasn't even real.
Right. And then any uprising, you might have, like, in that area where they were from, they had the Latimer Massacre, where they gunned down 19 demonstrators in the coal, no telling how many others were injured, and nobody goes to jail, nobody gets prosecuted for it. They all get along, you know, just like the Matewan sort of thing. See? Nothing. Blair Mountain, nothing happens. Nobody gets prosecuted. You know.
Well, no, people got prosecuted out of Blair Mountain. The mine workers were prosecuted for treason.
Oh, that's right. They rounded up the mine workers, right. Right.
Yet treason.
Right. Amazing. You know, too, you were talking about Whole Foods a while back.
And yeah.
To that, I don't know if I mentioned, I sent you an email on some of this stuff with some details.
Yeah, that Jerkwater CEO.
Yeah, John Mackey is the CEO. You know, he gave himself a $2 dividend before the end of the year because they knew that the higher taxes were going to kick in. They were worried about too a change in the dividends.
Oh, these anti-Obamacare freaks drive me nuts, Andy. I don't know if you saw it, but the Commonwealth of Virginia has decided to move a lot of its full-time workers to part-time status so as to avoid Obamacare.
Amazing. How terrible.
Well, that's, you know, that rises to the...
Just pieces of...
Remember when George W. talked about the axis of evil? You know, George W. liked to talk about things being evil a lot, you know, as if it's all... Well, you know what? That's evil.
That is evil. That's ruthless.
Because you know what? They're still going to expect the same amount of performance from them.
Mm-hmm. And, man, you don't have health care, man. You die. You die. I mean, it's the Alan Grayson thing. You know, don't get sick. If you do get sick, die quickly.
Absolute truth. And by the way, we did pay a call on Alan Grayson's office, so we hope to have him on the bill sooner rather than later. We also paid a call to Joe Kennedy's office and badly want him on the bill too.
Yeah, Alan Grayson should definitely be on that.
Yeah, that ought to be an easy one. The other thing we need to do, and I have written and not received a response, we need to get Progressive Democrats of America on board to get the whole PDA caucus signed on. There's no reason for them not to.
True. I agree with you. Well, next PDA meeting, I'll bring it up. I know the PDA people were onto it. They had your press release originally when it was HR 5959.
Yeah, and our good friend Jeff Biggers posted over at their website too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another thing about Whole Foods too. You know, they did support our Prop 37, which was actually a good thing. You know, there's a lot of bad things they do, but they did actually even run some radio commercials for Prop 37. A little too few, too late, but we should give them some credit. They actually did put their rear end out there a little bit on the Prop 37 which a lot of other food-oriented companies took the opposite side of that ledger. But can't kick them for that, even though they do have a neoliberal fascist CEO.
And there's really no other way to describe that.
He's a nutcase, man.
Yeah, chase him down with a net.
Yeah, he's got his... You saw the other thing, we were just talking about the mines and, you know, what goes on, you know, with the mountaintop removal, the longevity. There was an article that came out just a little bit ago about the National Health Service did some more studies on longevity, and the United States is now 17th.
Jeez.
In, you know, our capacity to... certain mortality rates. I wrote down some notes on it. I'm trying to look for them actually right now. I don't see it, but we're now 17th in longevity.
We're 17. We're 17. USA.
Exactly.
Yeah, is this where we cue up the Lee Greenwood song? You know, God bless the USA. We're number 17 in health in longevity.
And it kills me too. You know how they talk about, you know, moving the ages up for Medicare and for Social Security and stuff. And here, you know, our life expectancy just isn't there. Yeah, that came out in January 10th. I saw the Financial Times did an article. The U.S. trails peers in terms of health and life expectancy. 17th overall, and that was by the National Institute of Health. And they found we're dying younger. We moved the dial that people under 50 are dying faster than they were before. Gee whiz! You think not having health insurance might have something to do with that? Gosh. You know, facts mean nothing, right?
Right. Utterly. Absolutely. Nothing.
Amazing. There's another tidbit I saw, too. You know how we talk about Greece? I know Sandra does quite a bit. But I saw an article a while back. I guess it was on the 12th of January, to be exact. That, you know, the IMF and the European Commission are putting the screws to Greece because, of course, they have a lot of their money tied up in there, you know, about $180 billion in loans to get Greece off its back. So what Greece had to do was they actually had to raise their corporate tax rate. You know? So when the big boys, when the elite want to suck the money out of a country, they will actually raise the corporate tax rate in a country. They raise it from 20% to 26%. So when they want their money, they have no problem doing that.
No.
Of course, you know, most of the rest of the world, like here, Obama wants to lower ours from the 35 down to, I think, 25, 26, something like that. But, you know, when they want the money, and here we have this huge deficit, why aren't we raising our corporate tax rates? They're doing it in Greece. And the IMF wants their money back. They want to raise the revenue.
Oh, yeah, they'll turn an entire country upside down and shake its pockets out.
Right. And, you know, too, we talked about in France, where they have the 75% top marginal tax rate.
Right.
You know, that is after $1.3 million, too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, nobody's getting impoverished.
Right. That's a million euros. So it's not like, you know, that's a marginal rate. You're not going to hit that until you make over $1 million in income. Yeah, you know, it's far
and
higher.
Realistically, you spent more time over there. You spent more time over there than I have. What can you do? With two, I mean, what is it that they? Let me put it this way: what is it that you can't do if you're making €1 million a year? I mean, it's got to be a fairly minuscule list, doesn't it, Andy? Because you're certainly going to eat anything you want to eat. You're going to drive pretty much anything you want to drive. You're going to live pretty much anywhere short of the Palace of Versailles that you want to live. Your kids can go wherever they want to go to school.
No question about it.
You can vacation in the swankiest place in the world you possibly want. You can travel at will. What is it about what is it above a million euros that to which you are enabled, or which you see what I'm saying?
Well, I'm definitely in the camp, and I know he's not one of my favorites, but Tom Hartman's been on this. No billionaires. We don't need billionaires. There's no need for billionaires. Shouldn't have them. They shouldn't be able to become billionaires. You know, the taxes should be high enough. And certainly you would think after you made that million, that, man, you can live pretty damn good.
And that reminds this would be an interesting thing to find out, and maybe somebody in the Horn family will want to go digging around and find it. When did America get its first billionaire?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's probably Rockefeller, I would think, but I could be wrong. It might have been during the 1920s, actually, but I don't know.
I think that would be an interesting thing to find out.
Yeah.
Because it's not like this country did not have a great number of wealthy people before they were billionaires.
Right. Talk about wealth. Did you see Mr. Obama's inauguration? Put $180 million into that.
I did see that. Well, I saw that number. I was here. I didn't go to the inauguration. I was there the next day.
$50 million from We the People, and $100 million from corporate donations. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, and not just corporate. One of the things I found out, I think it was the teachers union that pumped a horse gagging load of money into the inauguration, and labor didn't even get a single mention in the inaugural address. Not one mention.
Yeah, without card check, we're hosed. Well, it kills me too. Now, even under a Democrat, the unions are retrenching. They lost 400,000 in membership, went down in percentage of the working population.
Well, yeah,
unions. We're still going down.
Bossman Wayne and I were talking about that the other day.
It's in the dial. Dial's not even changing.
Yeah, he was talking about the fact that, well, you know, it's public works projects that provide work for a lot of union building trades.
Right.
And a lot of the building trades have a shitload of their membership on the bench. They're not working. So that means there's no dues coming in to support the organizations. And you cannot tell me that in the assault on federal spending, that was not a calculated, determined act on the part of the right wing. Because if, you know, it's a sort of underhanded union busting. You know, Davis-Bacon monies are what pays for a lot of, you know, union public works jobs. And so if you can cut down on the money that's being spent on public works, which of course would have been an economic stimulus in the first place.
Well, we're in austerity. I mean, no question about it. They don't say it, but we have been in austerity under Obama. His presidency has been an austerity presidency. They are not pumping money into the system. Like you said, if you don't go, you don't have that Davis-Bacon Act, you're not employing union workers. You're basically scabs.
Well, but at this point in time, they're not
contract.
They're not employing anybody.
Right. Right.
So, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, this Republican approach to fixing the debt is to basically kneecap working people who otherwise work on keeping the infrastructure running.
Right. The whole thing has been an austerity program. And it's been such a crime because every time else in our history, when it came time to pay off large debts, especially from war, which is mainly what this debt was all about, an unpaid-for war, a war paid for on the credit card, you go to the rich people to pay that because they certainly don't shed their lives and blood in battle like the working class people do.
Oh, hell no.
By the working class. And who's getting the biggest benefit over these oil wars anyway? Of course, it's the plutocracy and the elite. They got to pay up, man. Back to a 70% inheritance tax, man. You know, Obama really let us down by only cutting a 40% inheritance tax after 5 million. He really let us down. They're not serious about getting rid of the deficit. And they want, you know, all to go on the backs of working people.
Sure.
No question.
Yeah, where it belongs, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's the way they view it. You know, they screwed up, and our purpose is to be there when they screw up.
Right. And with like 80 teabaggers in the Congress, with a Republican-held Congress, you know we're going nowhere. You know, nothing's gonna happen. Obama wanted to raise $1.6 trillion. He's only going to raise $620 billion with the tax, code that he put together. That's mouse, you know, basically mouse nuts, man. It's going to do nothing to turn the dial on the deficit.
That's a great phrase.
It's all got to come out of cuts in spending and, you know, no major public works projects, which is what we need, like you were just saying.
Yeah, Jug a Punch in the chat room introduced, I haven't seen this phrase before, ball and chained CPI.
Yeah.
Ball and chain. True.
Well, you don't have a COLA for the Social Security, that'll hurt there too, big time.
You bet. Hey, Andy, I got a roll. We've miraculously made it to the end of the program.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear you on. I thought when I first dialed in, you might not be on at all today.
No, I was a moron. I forgot to flip the third switch. It flooded here in the studio, and I was being a little nervous about sitting around next to electrical things with water all over the floor.
All right. Well, I hope you get it all cleaned up and everything's under.
Yeah, that's tomorrow's project. let's see. Monday, get internet service back, get horn on the air. Tuesday, replumb house.
Good luck, man. You're a lifeline to us, though. Remember that. You're a lifeline.
Thank you, Andy.
The free world we have, whatever free world it is.
You know what? That's a compliment I don't feel like I deserve, but it sure does. It sure does warm my heart.
Well, your callers don't hurt either.
Best in the biz. You're one of them.
Shout out to Bill.
All right.
From Bill.
You take care, Andy.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from Northern California. It's our buddy Andy. It's time to get out of here. Made it through. Time to start tearing the studio down and sopping up flood. Before enlightenment, gather firewood, carry water. After enlightenment, gather firewood, carry water. Just got to keep it in perspective, you know? And one thing that damn sure is in perspective is the fact that none of this would be here without all of you. You have responded to a crisis, one of the great crises of the existence of this radio network, and you have done so amazingly. And we thank you. All of us, thank you. Give yourselves a hand. Maybe we'll be a footnote someday. But that footnote will say that people determined to have independent media and to have a free exchange of ideas kept it going through thick and thin enough to read through. Thank you. Thanks go out to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy. Thanks to everybody who helped get the word out about the crisis we were facing here. Thank you very much. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes for all the help through all of this. Thanks to John Fox out there working on the website. Thank you, brother. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Nothing happens here without the good offices of the White Rose. Ben Birch has been doing this for over 10 years. Thanks, Ben. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch,
crmw.net, and yes, acact.org. Go there. Help us end the horror of mountaintop removal in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.